everyone, to UConn 360, the world's greatest podcast covering every aspect of life at Connecticut's nationally ranked public research university. Today, we're coming to you from the historic Lakeside Building on the store's campus. And today is a special occasion. It is the inaugural installment of UConn 360, and we hope to bring many more of these to you so that we can learn, laugh, and grow old together. We'll be coming into your earbuds or other listening device on a bi-weekly basis starting today and alternating every other Wednesday. So subscribe to us on iTunes or Google Play, bookmark our webpage, or find us on popular microblogging website, twitter.com/UConn Podcast, and we will become the best of friends. So who are we? Who is this we that I'm talking about? Well, my name is Tom Breen. I'll be your facilitator of sorts on this journey. I graduated from UConn in the year 2000 with a degree in political science. I worked for a variety of media outlets before coming home in 2012. Currently, I work in university communications, where I do everything from show film crews around campus to sending out text messages when there's bad weather. I'm thrilled to be here, and I hope you feel the same way. My co-pilots on this trusty vessel are Ken Best and Julie Bartuka, and instead of me prattling on even more than I have, let's meet them both. Julie, tell us about yourself, your experiences with this great university, and what on earth we hope to achieve with UConn 360.
Hi, Tom. As you know, I'm super excited to be starting this podcasting adventure with you and Ken, because I won't stop talking about it here at the office. I've bled blue since birth. My parents met at UConn in the 80s, and I grew up cheering for the Huskies, hearing how great this place is, and was able to experience it myself as a student from 2006 to 2010, where I completely fell in love with everything UConn and haven't looked back. I graduated in 2010, as I mentioned, with journalism and marketing degrees, and then worked at the Hartford Courant for 4 years as a reporter. And in 2014, I came back home, just like you, to work in the marketing department here in University Communications. Now I'm a senior marketing associate, which means I write, edit, project manage, help with social media, help produce videos, and do basically whatever they let me, like this podcast. And as for UConn 360, we hope we'll give listeners a flavor of everything that goes on at UConn that they might not always hear about. We want to take you behind the scenes, give you a glimpse at student life, our groundbreaking research that we do, some little-known history, which Tom loves, and whatever else we can find. And it's going to be so much fun!
Ken Best, the man, the myth, the legend, tell us about yourself, how you came to this university, and your hopes for UConn 360 as it develops.
Well, I've been here for 16 years. I was the editor of UConn magazine for 10 years, and since then have been working on UConn Today, writing stories, which is the most fun that you can have is writing, as we all know, and writing, continuing to write for the magazine. Before that, as I've been introduced in some classes that I lecture to on and off, I've either had a checkered past or a varied career on both sides of the media fence. As to what we hope to accomplish, I remember the first column I wrote when I was the editor of the magazine was the fact that you can walk down the street and find a story under every rock on this campus. And I think that's still the case, and we have many more stories to tell. And this is a different way to do that.
So that's who we are, and the different way we're going to do things today is we're going to bring you a couple of fun looks at different corners of life here on campus, some of those stories that Ken mentioned, specifically the Connecticut Repertory Theater and WHUS. We're also going to look at a neglected episode of UConn History in a feature that I am told will soon have a better name than Tom's History Corner. But before we get into that, we want to briefly catch you up on some of the newsy and noteworthy things happening on campus. So without further ado, let's get into some Husky headlines. I didn't run that name by Ken or Julie. It's negotiable. All right, first, big congratulations to UConn alumna Felicia George. She is representing her native Canada in this month's Winter Olympics. She's a 2010 graduate of UConn. She has a degree in physiology and neurobiology. And when she was here, she was a standout track and field star. She was a Big East champion, actually, in her senior year. And she also competed for Team Canada in the Summer Olympics twice, in London and in Rio, which makes her a two-season Olympian. She's competing in the bobsled event, which is happening this week. As you listen, it's happening. Maybe not exactly as you listen, but the same day, roughly. And she's actually UConn's only our second ever winter Olympian. She joins Bethany Hart, who also completed in the bobsled back in 2006. So good luck, Felicia. And I have to say, I didn't realize you could be a two-season Olympian, kind of like a two-sport all-star?
It's up to the individual whether they want to compete, and each sport has a federation that you have to compete in. So there's a bobsled group, there's an ice skating group, obviously, and then there's hockey and all the other events that take place. So she qualified through the bobsled on her own. So there you go.
I did learn that recently because Pete Marinas, our staff photographer, who was at the Olympics, told me about that oily guy from Tonga, if you guys remember, from the Summer Olympics.
Sure, the oily guy, yeah.
The oily guy. He was a big, beefy guy who came in all greased up in the opening ceremonies, and he actually liked it so much. I can't remember what sport he competed in the Summer Olympics, but he decided that he wanted to be a Winter Olympian as well, and he trained in his, you know, island Pacific country to be a cross-country skier and came back all greased up to the Winter opening ceremony.
Well, that marching in that dress with no shirt is part of the costuming and the tradition of his island. And most interestingly, he did that in the Summer Olympics. He also did it in Korea last week.
That in itself deserves a medal.
It was cold there.
In my opinion.
Commitment.
Moving on. Today, the Board of Trustees is voting on a proposal that would see fees reduced for about 10,000 of our students across the university. The Student Fee Review Committee made its recommendations in a comprehensive report last month. Among the fees the committee wants to do away with are fees that apply to specific majors, which range from $10 to $700 for landscape architecture majors. Also, academic materials fees that apply to a broad array of classes and labs. If I can editorialize for a second here, and no one's stopping me, this is an illustration of how, even though times are difficult and we face funding challenges, as most public universities do, people at the university actually do care about making it affordable as possible for our students. So I'm happy to see that. I'm also happy for our landscape architecture majors. What else? What else is happening? What have I missed, Julie?
So we had a cool study come out recently by a behavioral psychologist here named Amy Gorin. She found that if your partner is losing weight, it's likely that you are as well. She calls this a ripple effect among couples, so the rate at which you're losing weight might be the same too. Even if you're not involved in a formalized weight loss program, if your partner is doing really well eating, it's going to affect you as well.
Ken, is there anything, any husky headline you want to highlight?
I did a story recently for UConn Today about philosophy, which has some national implications. Lewis Gordon is a philosophy professor here at UConn, and he's the editor of a new blog on the website of the American Philosophical Association. It's called Black Issues in Philosophy. Professor Gordon organized the blog, and he has a team of faculty and graduate students who are working on that blog here in Storrs. And it's significant that he is the one leading this effort because he has practiced what's known as public philosophy for a very long time. He started his own blog very early in the inception of the blogosphere. He says the goal is to provide a forum for examining questions and issues of relevance to the African diaspora from a variety of perspectives. And he thinks the blog format is particularly suited to get issues out that come up very quickly and where instant information is needed in this day and age of the 24-hour news cycle.
All right, so those are the Husky headlines. I want to move on to some of the more fun aspects of our episode this week. And one of those centers on one of the many unique features of UConn, in that it is home to the Connecticut Repertory Theater. That's the producing arm of the Department of Dramatic Arts. It's a year-round theater that sells more than 20,000 tickets a year for productions that involve the work of professional actors and artists, faculty members, as well as students. Ken, you recently had an opportunity to talk with someone who's well-known to theater fans in the region and who has also been doing some great work at CRT. Tell us about it.
Matt Polizzi is the managing director of CRT, and he's been there since 2013. He's a UConn graduate, and after finishing his degree in theater, he went to production and management. He spent some time at the Ivoryton Playhouse before going over to the award-winning Oddfellows Playhouse Youth Theater in Middletown. He was first the managing director and then became the executive director. Since he's been at UConn, at Connecticut Rep, he's been doing a really good job producing and managing everything that goes on in putting on a production, and there's a lot of details. Negotiating contracts, handling all the requirements for plays and musicals, and he works with the artistic directors. First it was Vincent Cardinal, who was the head of dramatic arts here before he moved on, and now with Michael Bradford. When Matt read That Poor Girl and How He Killed Her, which is a new play by the up-and-coming playwright Jen Silverman, he said, I think this is something I want to do for the studio workshop series. So I sat down with Matt recently and talked about his return to the director's chair.
What was the challenge for you coming back to the director's position after not having done it for a while, but with all the experience that you now have over the years as the manager of a company and being responsible for all these myriad of details, which is not unlike what a director has to be worried about, but leaving that other piece behind and thinking as a director now?
You know, one of the things that happens is, you know, that because I'm still involved in theater, you know, I'm seeing 12 plus shows a year at my own theater and at other theaters out in the world. And so I'm always still using that muscle. If you're an artist, when you sit down and you watch a play, seldom are you so captivated by the play that you're not thinking about choices that are being made by the actors, by the design, by the director while you're watching it. At least I'm always thinking that way. So that muscle is kind of always getting like a little bit of a workout, you know? It's like I'm getting my basic number of steps in. But I think that the biggest challenge was myself, you know? My own reservations and not ambivalence, you know, I guess fear. Can I still do this? How easy will it come back? Will I remember what I'm supposed to be doing? And I was really surprised in some ways how quickly, you know, you kind of like you shake the rust off and all of a sudden you're talking with the vocabulary that you've been able to talk with before. You're making decisions, you know, you're trusting your instincts and your kind of own inner artistic voice, and everything just kind of goes along well. It's the luxury of being able to be, you know, to walk into a rehearsal room any night of the week and watch a different director and a different group of actors working through a show in their way. And everybody has a different process, and everybody has different tactics that they use to, you know, to tell a story, different, you know, tricks. And I'm able to adopt what I like and what speaks to me really easily.
Was there a point where you got stuck on something, and knowing that you have all this resource here, material and people, did you have to ask for help at any
point?
Oh,
well, yes, because I'm not alone in this. I mean, the way I always view it as the director, I do not have to be the smartest person in the room. Never do. I just need to know what story we're telling and where we need to go, because I had a phenomenal team of designers, grad students and undergrad students. I had a phenomenal cast, phenomenal dramaturg, Professor Lindsay Cummings, who was here. I had all of the resources, you know, that we have here in terms of faculty. So there were problems staging some of the physical violence. There was an incident of sexual assault that occurred on stage during the play. And so I was bringing in other faculty that had more experience in terms of staging physical violence, people that had experience working in, you know, different medium. We used a lot of projection in the show. And I was asking everybody for how they would solve problems. You know, this is what I'm trying to do. How would you do it? And let people help. That's the great thing about theater. It's a collaborative art form.
So how is this return to the director's chair going to help you when you're working with the directors that come in the future at CRT and working with the faculty who come in and direct and the actors?
I think that it, you know, my ability to function and communicate as an artist, and not just a manager, not just somebody that's administrative, just helps make conversations easier. It helps build rapport with the different artists that we bring in, both actors, designers, and directors that we work with professionally. It just builds my, I think it builds my skill set when I'm making administrative and business-driven decisions of understanding the art itself and a risk, creative choice that's being taken by a director or by the company as a whole, and, you know, being able to believe in that and not need to be convinced as much because I understand, you know, I understand the art form itself. There's lots of, you know, organizations that are run by somebody with strong administrative skills, but they haven't worked in that art form necessarily.
Toward the end of our discussion, I asked Matt if he would go back to the director's chair if he had the opportunity. He's open to it, if the right thing comes along, of course. In the meantime, he still has a lot of work to do.
One of the challenges always with any arts organization is financial resources and making sure that people understand that the arts are not an extra. We have wonderful support from the president and the provost and the School of Fine Arts dean for Connecticut Repertory and the work that we do. But I think that when we can still say on a whole that when you look at the budget that is allocated towards an arts organization versus something that's in the STEM field, that they're very different numbers. There's a lot of STEM that's involved in the arts. Sound systems, lighting systems, the way that lighting has changed over the last 10 years in terms of the ability for LED and moving lights and all sorts of technology. So trying to have the best technology to tell your story is important, and having to have the right technology to train your students so they can go out into the world and be competitive is a whole other piece. So I think that's the biggest challenge facing every arts organization, whether they're at UConn or they're out in the world on their own. How do we compete for resources? How do we compete for that recognition that what we do is a benefit for the entire community? The arts build community. They build people as individuals, and they create something that is completely unique, and it's also rejuvenating for our soul. I mean, the arts do so much, and it's trying to help communicate that value and get people to stop and recognize that value. You know, most people are listening to the radio right now, potentially, and they're listening to music, and it provides them with that release that they need on their drive into work. You watch a TV show at night, it's the arts as a way to relax, to spend time with family, to spend time with community, to build relationships and talk. And, you know, so those are just like the little mundane day-to-day examples of how the arts influence us every day.
All right. Well, that's interesting. And I want to mention that I got a chance to see that play, That Poor Girl, and how he killed her. And it was very funny, very topical about sort of social media's deforming effect on society.
Very Black Mirror sounds.
Yeah, kind of a Black Mirror vibe. It was a well-done production. I enjoyed it.
Most importantly, it was all students. There were no equity actors in there. It was a very impressive cast because it was pretty much a range of undergraduate students and a couple of graduate students.
That's one of the cool things about CRT, that like there's a mix, and sometimes you see a really well-done production and you realize it's all students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're so lucky here just to have all the different opportunities to see theater between Jorgensen and CRT and the other small theaters that are run through the School of Fine Arts. It's just, people should take advantage of that more.
And we are in the spring semester, and there are 3 productions coming up. One is already underway or about to be underway, The Crucible by Arthur Miller, followed by another studio series show, the award-winning playwright Ki Nguyen, She Kills Monsters. That's going to begin in March. And then we have to bring The Bard back, Shakespeare's As You Like It, in April. That'll close out the spring semester. And then Terrence Mann, the Broadway star, Tony-nominated actor and singer and everyman. He's been in films, on television. For the Nutmeg Summer Series, he's the artistic director. He's been up on campus off and on. He'll be back full-time as we get closer to the summer. Disaster, June 7th, it will begin. Sweeney Todd, June 21st, he will be directing and performing in that. And then Jesus Christ Superstar, July 12th. So the musical summer, as usual, with the Nutmeg Summer Series.
I'll have to check out Sweeney Todd. I don't know if you guys know, Terrence Mann was my childhood crush when he starred as the Beast in Beauty and the Beast.
Wow.
On Broadway. Yes. Fun.
We can get you. We can introduce you to him.
There you go.
I don't know if that still stands, but anyway.
All right. So that's, there's a lot of things to see on campus, but there's also a lot of things to listen to.
Oh.
Whoa. especially WHUS, UConn's venerable student-run radio station. That's more than music, though. It's a thriving part of the university, operating, of course, over the air and in the growing digital space. And it's constantly evolving as student expectations change. Julie, you had a chance to sit down with one of the people instrumental in making the radio magic happen. Tell us more.
Yes, so WHUS, or as my interview subject Kaylee calls it, WHUS, is one of the more than 600 student activities we have on campus, and it's one that gives students and people like Ken a really hands-on dive into their interests, getting into radio, producing the entire station. So students run the show 24 hours a day. They produce really great content, and they have to make sure there's no dead air, I learned. And Kaylee manages to lead the team while being involved elsewhere on campus as well. So let's take a listen.
All right, where are we?
We are in Studio B of WHUS Radio.
Cool. What are you wearing? Because it's really cool.
I'm wearing a fuzzy pink sweater. Funny enough, there's a backstory to this. The outfit that I'm wearing currently is the same outfit that I wore my freshman year at the WHUS holiday party. So now that it's senior year, I thought, well, let me revamp this outfit and put a twist to it and just wear it with a miniskirt.
Well, you look like a college radio general manager with your Vans, checkerboard Vans and cool pink, I forget what that's called. Mohair, maybe?
Mohair.
I don't know. Fuzzy sweater.
I just hope awesome. Everyone visualizes it. Just fuzzy, funky.
All right.
We're doing a spotlight on UConn student Kaylee Townsend, who plans to graduate this coming December with degrees in communications and political science. I first met Kaylee when we did a casting call a couple years ago. We do these every so often in university communications to find students to feature in our materials. And I immediately told everybody about her because she was so bubbly and infectious and enthusiastic about UConn. I wanted to use her wherever I could. I learned then, and when I talked to her recently, that she fell for UConn after visiting while she was still in high school.
But UConn was definitely one of those schools that when I took a tour here, it just stood out in terms of school spirit. Well, if I just want to go to college, then I'll go to Princeton. But if I want to actually do 4 years at a university and get the whole experience, then UConn was my number one for that.
So you've obviously talked about how much you love UConn. Why do you love UConn so much?
I love having opportunity, and I love being indecisive because there's so many things here. And that's why I love it.
And she has taken advantage of everything. So many things.
I went to a tiny high school, about 68 kids in my graduating class. So small Catholic school in Westchester. So coming to Storrs, I wanted to get the school spirit that high school didn't give me. Whereas I wanted to go to all of the games as possible, get involved with all of the opportunities that weren't available for me in high school. So the first thing I did join was the radio station because I was involved in the school newspaper in high school. So I wanted to change things up and not join the newspaper, but actually do the kind of the opposite. So I joined the radio station, did the training my freshman year, actually received an on-air slot spring semester my freshman year. I took a semester off to actually pursue an internship and get really excited about radio in another facet as to where I came back for sophomore year and garnered my first position as the social media director. And it was a new position for the radio station, and I thought social media was this cool, hip, upcoming thing, and also being a part of a cool, hip radio station, the two had to combine in some sort of way. And it was a learning opportunity for myself to grow as a student leader and actually understand what that meant. Because when you look at a radio station, you just assume, okay, it's the day-to-day basis. But when you're a student leader in a university organization, then you have a whole nother list of opportunities and responsibilities. So I felt that after taking that semester off and then hopping back into college, I also matured in a whole nother way. That was, okay, you really wanted to do this? Now let's give you all of this and here's the bag to come with it. And I feel as though I really ran with it because after that, I became a tour guide, and I said, okay, I love UConn so much. Let me get involved in another way and tell other students my story of why I'm so excited about this place. And then moving forth with WHUS, I said, okay, I want to get more into leadership, but not really in a content creating position. I want to see more of the ins and outs and the behind the scenes. And whereas I became the vice president, I was elected in 2016.
In Townsend's junior year, she was chosen to join the Social Media Advisory Group here in University Communications, a group of students that help guide our social media coverage and create content for us. And this combined her love of social media and the university itself. And then as a senior, she became president and general manager of the radio station.
I don't know. For me, I'm at the pinnacle of what I can do, especially now. My time here as an undergraduate is almost done, so I feel like I've climbed the ranks.
You're listening to 91.7 WHUS Stores. I'm DJ Kale, and this program is titled Salad Days.
And though she has her hands in many different activities and hopes to pursue a career in public relations, when I spent some time with her before winter break at WHUS, it almost seemed like she'd been perfectly cast in a teen movie about a quirky college radio station.
I did some research, and I was like, oh, Shakespeare coined the term salad days because it was to reflect on someone's, like, innocence and youth. And I thought, well, if it's your senior year, this is, like, formative, like, what right before you leave into the big world, everything's about to happen. I thought salad days is supposed to be the messiest part of your life, so I thought, okay, I'm going to play songs that each theme have to deal with a certain part of, like, college or pre-college or just, like, what I'm really feeling in the moment.
Sometimes the themes of her show are super relatable, like one she did about the early stages of having a crush. But sometimes...
Well, I did If I Were a Teenage Witch, which is really awesome. I did that during the first week of September when it got a little cold, and I got to play The Cure and The Smiths and talk about Robert Smith versus Morrissey.
With her passion and eclectic musical taste, she's definitely right where she's supposed to be.
My all-time favorite artist, I think because it's when I really started getting to music and appreciating it, probably is Green Day. It has to be Green Day mixed with Fleetwood Mac. And that's weird.
A weird combination.
It's a weird, combination.
You should be on.
I'm DJ Kill signing off with Salad Days, and I'll catch you all next week on the flip side. Till then, here's Automation.
All right, so that's great stuff. If you want more WHUS, you can find them at whus.org or on all the social media platforms you know and love. You can also listen to them on the radio as they are a radio station. That's 91.7 on your FM dial. If you're in range.
They stream also on WHS.org.
See, you don't even have to be
in range.
If you're not in range.
And more importantly, in the summer, I will be back on the air.
Oh, most
and
importantly.
And Ken will be back on the air.
When the students leave, they need people to take their place, and I go back on the air in the summer. Sometime after commencement.
Can't wait.
Before we leave, I want to leave you with a little bit of the past. Now it's time for Tom's History Corner, which I'm told by the higher-ups at UConn 360 will have a better title soon. This is a little segment where I get to tell you about lesser-known incidents from the history of an institution that dates back to 1881. For this inaugural installment, I want to talk about a great podcast subject, which is crime. Specifically, the only shootout on campus to have involved a faculty member.
What?
I think it's the only one. It's the only one that I know of.
I hope so.
Yeah.
It's the one recorded.
It's the only one that's true. That's the only one we have evidence for. So, let's go back to the month of April in the year 1906. Teddy Roosevelt is president, Alsace-Lorraine is part of Germany, and in Storrs, Connecticut, a group of bank-robbing varmints is getting ready to hit what was known at the time as the Connecticut Agricultural College. This particular gang had recently robbed the post office in Chaplin and had plans to burgle the college treasury. Remember, this was a time when the college's finances were all in cash, and they were kept in a safe on campus.
Wow.
So let me be clear, that is no longer the case. We don't have cash. The college was tipped off at the likelihood of a robbery by the presence of unknown men rambling around campus. As a contemporary report in the Hartford Times put it, the college is located in a rather isolated part of Tolland County, and the presence of strangers there usually excites immediate attention. This is also no longer the case. So they were not going to have an easy time robbing University of Connecticut, though, because of one Professor Ernest D. Proudman. Proudman, who taught classes on stenography and penmanship, was also in charge of the college's finances. Effectively, he was the CFO, in addition to being a faculty member who taught penmanship. His dedication to his job was such that he took to conducting late-night patrols armed with a Winchester rifle.
He was bored teaching penmanship.
He was bored teaching penmanship, but he was well-armed.
I did not know that penmanship was a college subject.
We were in agricultural college at the time.
I also want to stress it is no longer a class taught here, maybe sadly. On the night of April 16th, Proudman and a night watchman with the wonderful name C.R. Hobby found a group of armed men trying to get inside the building that held the safe. They were trying to climb on a barrel and go through a window. According to the Hartford Times, the robbers opened fire when they saw the night watchman and Proudman, and Hobby and Proudman started shooting back. The only person hit was one of the robbers, who was shot in the arm by the eagle-eyed penmanship professor. The bandits fled through the woods, which are on the other side of Horse Barn Hill, and a large search party made up of students went out to look for them. The bandits apparently escaped in an automobile, which was a rarity in those days, and neither the Times nor historian Walter Stemmons, who recounts the episode in his 1931 History of Yukon, indicates what happened after that. We can only know. We can only speculate. But I can tell you what did not happen. People messing with Professor Ernest D. Proudman did not happen. So that's the story of what I remain confident is the only shootout in university history to involve a faculty member.
Did the students have weapons when they chased the bandits?
They did. They did. There was a farming school, and so they were salt of the earth. Yeah, probably pitchforks. Salt of the earth types. Those bandits are lucky they got away. All right, so that's going to do it for this installment of UConn 360. But before we say adieu, let's tell the good people of podcast land where else they can find us. Julie, where are you on social media, and is there anything you want to plug?
Yes, I am on Twitter at Julie Bartucca, Bartucca. I don't tweet very often, but when I do, it's good. And I'm going to plug UConn Health Journal, which is my baby. It is a magazine about UConn research that we send to doctors, and you may find it in a waiting room, but you can go to healthjournal.ucon.edu and read about all the incredible medical research that goes on here.
Ken, what about you?
I can be found at the UConn Magazine and UConn Today websites. That's pretty much it.
Well,
there's always interesting stuff to read.
Ken's our Luddite.
But you can also be found over the air on WHUS this summer.
Yes, sometime in the spring. But as far as the magazine, actually one piece in the magazine and two other pieces online in the online version of the magazine, which is now out. Magazine.ucon.edu is the website, and we've got a couple of interesting stories there. And then, of course, UConn Today, you just go to the School of Fine Arts section or arts section, and most everything there is by me.
It's true. And as for me, Tom Breen, you can find me on Twitter at TJ Breen.
Follow him.
I am taking a break from tweeting for Lent.
No.
But you can certainly find UConn 360 operating in all seasons on Twitter at UConn Podcast. Please follow us, tweet at us, suggest topics, ask questions. Tell us what happened to the guy who was shot by Professor Ernest D. Proudman. If you are the guy who was shot by Professor Ernest D. Proudman, we'd love to hear from you. And if you like the show and you want to keep listening, we're going to be your best friends if you subscribe to us on iTunes or Google Play. Rate and review us as well. But most importantly, tell your friends, spread the word, and get excited because our new episode is coming Wednesday, March 7th.